and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
This is Eric Arneson.
This is Joey Harrison.
And welcome to My Alchemical Bromance, the best blog in the universe.
In the universe.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Matt Anthony's unable to join us today. He's tied up with family commitments.
So we just
decided to go ahead and do this.
I was kind of thinking he was tied up with ignoring us.
He might be.
Yeah,
he might be. He's had enough of this debauchery.
Yes, he's decided that my alchemical bromance is just a pit of despair and hopelessness, and that and that he'll be back next time. So it's too bad that he's not here, because one of the things that I wanted to talk about tonight is the fact that we went to the Festival of the Dark Arts last weekend.
Yeah, unfortunately I had to miss that. How was it?
It was fun. There were a lot of lines. It was very, very busy. There were a lot of crowds. Like, we got in, we probably got there at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was so crowded that we didn't really know what was going on at first, and then we realized that the minute you stop walking around or you stop moving, you're probably at the end of a line. So it was a lot of standing in lines. The nice thing about that is that it was really hard to get too drunk. But it was also really hard to get to.
I don't know when that's ever a nice thing.
Well, I mean, the first time I went to the Festival of Dark Arts, I think I've told you this story before, but I took the Bruvana beer bus out there, and we drank on the way. The bus got lost, so it took us 3 hours to get to Astoria. So by the time we got there...
Was the driver drinking as well?
I hope not, but I would not have been able to tell, because by the time we got there, we were all, like, everybody on the bus was totally sloshed.
And, nice. So
I don't remember my first trip to the Festival of Dark Arts super well. I know I had a good time. I got my tarot cards read. There was some exploration and beer tasting and good friends and all that kind of stuff. Actually, one thing I do remember about that is that the beer selection at the first one I went to was not as exciting. Like, there were a lot of imperial stouts and a lot of kind of unusual stouts or limited release stouts, but probably at least half of them were ones that I'd had before or ones that I was familiar with. So this time, most of the stouts were ones that I had never even seen before.
Oh, very nice.
That was cool. Yeah. So that was a nice change, but there were a lot of lines. And it's funny, I felt like the dark arts part of it was emphasized a little stronger the first time. So the stuff that was kind of counterculture, non-beer related, so they have like a blacksmith and they have like an ice sculptor and they have like tarot card readers and they have performers of various types. I felt like the first time I went, they were a little bit more emphasized, and this time there were not as many of them around.
Oh, really?
Or if there were, it was such a... They were tucked off into corners so much that it was really hard to sort of enjoy them as part of a festival.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. So overall, it was just mostly a really, really crowded beer festival.
So was that at the brewery there, or was it at a different venue?
Oh, yeah. It was at Fort George Brewery in Astoria, Oregon. I guess I probably should have led with that. That would have been a good thing.
Yeah. Well, they can look it up.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't know if it was actually at the brewery or if they had it at an outside venue, somewhere, like in a field. So that you could get naked and roll around in the mud, and it'd be crazy.
This wasn't that kind of festival, Joey.
That's what all festivals are in Oregon. If you want them to be.
It was totally... Well, the brewery there, they kind of have about half a block worth of real estate. So they have their main sort of restaurant area. They've got the brewery. They have a big upstairs area that they do like pizza stuff in now. And then the brewery building, and then there's like a parking lot area in between. So they have a good amount of space. And then they sort of stretched out into the rest of the block. So it was kind of like a block, one block sized brewery.
Yeah, that's right. The second festival. Actual brewery area there is pretty good size. Mm-hmm. You know what else they had in Astoria this weekend?
The Fisherman's Poetry Contest.
Yeah.
Did you go?
I did not. I went actually went to Seaside Friday, stayed there. I went to McMiniman's.
Uh-huh.
Had some nice beers there. They've got a good location there in Gearhart. And they told me about the poet thing, but I skipped out on it.
Yeah. So what do you think of the McMiniman's beer? Like, what was your feeling about that?
You know, they get kind of a bad rap, but I think it's okay. It's pretty good beer.
Yeah.
I had a really nice coffee stout. Mm-hmm. It was delicious.
And what are you drinking right now? What's your beer right now? What is that?
I'm having the Hop Valley Alphadelic IPA from Eugene, Oregon.
Oregon.
Oregon. That's how you say Oregon from Oklahoma.
Well, we call it Oklahoma out here. I am currently drinking the Survival Stout from Hopworks. I figured since I was going to be talking about a stout beer festival, I should drink another stout. And it's delicious.
That's why you make the big bucks, Eric, because you plan ahead. I should be drinking a stout.
Well, you know, I mean, what can I say? I was there this afternoon. And I was like, "Oh crap! I gotta go record a podcast. I should buy some stout."
Well, I just so happened to be drinking an Alphadelic IPA stout from Hop Valley. It's delicious.
What do you think about it? Tell us a little bit about it. Is it super hoppy? Is it moderately hoppy? Are you drinking it out of a can so you can't smell it? Perhaps.
Yeah, I'm drinking it out of a can like a savage.
Uh huh. But that's okay because you're in Washington, and most Washington people are a little savage.
Yeah, that's true. Washington. I'm on the mountain in Camas at that.
Ooh, hill people.
I don't know. It's got some kind of earthy, piney notes to it. It's really good. It's an easy drink. Uh-huh. It's not super hoppy like a lot of IPAs. So it's kind of like middle of the road for IPAs. Mm-hmm. In my book, anyway.
The Survival Stout is an interesting stout because it apparently has 7 different grains in it and coffee. Ooh, so it's sort of a super over-the-top kind of stout, but it's got a really nice mellow flavor. Kind of sweet, kind of roasty, a nice thick body, and it's not super boozy either. It's only 5.8% alcohol.
Oh,
by volume.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I really like the stout. And in fact, I was at Hopworks the day they started canning this stout. So they'd been making it. Like, it's one of their old staples. They'd bottled it and all this sort of stuff. But when they started canning it, I was actually there that day with Nate. And we were just hanging out. And the owner of Hopworks, who I met years and years ago, he's like, "Oh, Eric, you're here on the perfect day. Come downstairs. We got something to show you." So Nate and I went downstairs, and we were there when they ran the first Survival Stout cans through the machine.
Oh, very nice.
It was pretty fun because, you know, they had to like get everything calibrated. So there are all these like half full cans that came off first. And so we were just drinking these improperly filled cans of beer and watching the really loud machine go.
That's a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
When Matt had his brewery, I remember seeing some of the production stuff like that. It was impressive.
Did his brewery have have its own bottling system, or did they bring in like a mobile bottler?
You know what? When I was there, he had cans. I believe he did have a bottling system as well. Yeah.
Okay.
But when they kicked up production, they had a large scale canning operation going.
Mm-hmm.
It was an impressive operation.
Yeah. I wonder how many barrels they do. I wonder what the size of Anthem Brewing is now.
I'm not sure. I tried to put it out of my mind.
So since Matt's not here, which I don't think we should dwell on too much, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to discuss any of the beers I tried at the Festival of the Dark Arts, but I will include the names of some of them in the show notes.
Cool. That sounds like a good plan.
So when we finished our last podcast, do you remember where we were?
Ooh. No. I was hammered.
You were not hammered. You were not hammered. Actually.
I've been drinking satanic beers or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, possibly, but no, you were. It was the first place we went that day.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the brewery. I'm terrible at this.
We were at Beerlick Brewing. I remember.
Beerlick, that's right.
Sitting in the back room. There's a lot of snow on the ground.
Or as I like to call it, Bearlick.
It might be Bearlick. I suppose we would probably have to look online or something and figure out how it's really pronounced. But you said that you wanted the topic for this podcast to be sex magic.
Yeah, I think we should hold off on that.
That's cool, because I don't know very much about sex magic, so I'm not really sure what we'd talk about. I mean, I'd be like, so, Joey, tell me about sex.
Tell me about sex. What's it like? It's delicious.
Is it always magic?
It's kind of like pizza. Even when it's bad, it's still good.
Yeah, yeah. But does sex magic work that way?
What do you mean? It's bad, it's still kind of good?
Yeah, yeah.
No. because if it works, it's like anything, you know, if it works and it's you get the intended result, but you didn't do things correctly and you didn't check to make sure it was okay with the universe through divination, uh-huh, it could be very bad.
Yeah. Okay. So it follows the same rules.
Yeah.
Now, sex magic can be either solo or with a partner, right?
Correct.
And if it is with a partner, is it important that your partner knows what's going on?
It's best, yeah. Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of joining. If you're with someone who's
like forces,
right.
Yeah.
You don't want to pull one over on somebody.
No, that's. I mean, sometimes you do, but not in that situation.
No.
Okay, well, I mean, even though I don't know anything about sex magic in particular, and I'm still making you talk about it, even though you said we should wait to talk about it.
Yeah.
I did bring some books.
You did? What did you bring?
Yeah, yeah. I have two books. One of them is this one. The Secret History of Western Sexual Mysticism, Sacred Practices and Spiritual Marriage by Arthur Versluis, which I have read. Look at all of my little notes here.
Oh, fancy.
I didn't review it very much. I don't totally remember what all of it is about. And then this other book that I have not read, Kabbalah and Eros.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard of that.
It's fairly scholarly, so it's one of those books where when it's time to read it, I'm gonna have to be like, okay, I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna read this, it's gonna take forever, I'm probably gonna fall asleep a lot in the middle of it, but I'm totally gonna learn some interesting things that I will forget later. But like the sex magic thing, when you guys first brought it up, and I was like, oh crap, I don't want to talk about that. it does remind me of a lot of stuff. Like there's a lot of, so today in the modern mystery tradition culture, in the modern, do we have a word for this? In modern,
I think they call it bullshit.
In modern bullshit culture.
Modern bullshit culture.
In modern bullshit culture, like sex magic and like it's viewed as sort of a secret by initiatory groups, right? So like in the OTO, sex magic is something that you're taught at like upper levels, and it's always sort of like kept hushed. You know, you don't it's secret.
It is. It is. But actually, there's almost kind of like this new age sex magic movement going on now. And actually, it's interesting. Vice News wrote an article about it not long ago.
What did they say?
So it was an interview with this couple that they basically travel around and do sex magic workshops. Mm-hmm. And it's very, you know, it's going to work because just like in chaos magic, which that's basically kind of what sex magic is. If, as long as you, it's basically like tricking your mind into believing that something has happened and using specific tools, to implant that deep in the subconscious. So you use the orgasm, the sexual function of, or the function of sex, I guess you would say, to
the sexual function of the function of sex.
Exactly. To fire off a symbol in your subconscious that causes you to go after the things that you want, and that it's not going to happen without taking action on your part and actually going out and doing something to attain that thing. But it's a way of just gaining momentum through shooting those symbols into your subconscious mind. But this, the new age workshop I was talking about that Vice wrote about, it was pretty interesting. And talk about your book a little bit there, and I'll look it up. Get a refresher.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess one of the things I would like to mention is that, you know, while you're talking about sex magic, sex has always had a pretty big element in mysticism as well. So it's not always used just for like purely magical purposes in terms of like, you know, thaumaturgy, like sigil magic or anything like that, or that sort of stuff, but also in it's also used in as sort of a mystery in attaining knowledge of like higher states or like, you know, godhead and that sort of thing. And you can see it in various traditions. Another book which I suspect is way over there in a pile that I'm not going to try to, it'll fall over if I try to get the book.
Eric was killed by a giant book collapse. It was horrible. I saw the whole thing in front of my eyes on Google Hangouts.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it. It's a big book. It's a load bearing book right now though. So I'm afraid that if I shift it, it'll be bad, but it's a book called Why Mrs. Blake Cried, by, Schuchard. I can't remember her first name. I think it's Mary Schuchard. But it talks about a Protestant cult that I guess we shouldn't call them a cult. They're a church, the Moravian Church. And William Blake was a member of them. And they apparently had these very sexually charged meditations on Christ that they would do that were... in her book, like some of them go so far as to imagine the spear wound in Jesus's side as he hangs on the cross as a vagina, which you would then have your way with. And it would be like a method of understanding Jesus as almost like the womb in which the world was grown and born from, or something of that nature, where the sexual nature of because there's an element of sex and generation and baby making in the whole creation story.
Right.
And you see it even in books. So, you know, there's like the whole story about how when Mathers first translated the, or maybe it wasn't Mathers, maybe it was von Rosenroth, but you know, when the Zohar was originally translated, all of the sexual stuff got taken out of it because people were like, oh, or the translator is like, ooh, this isn't kosher with the church. I got to take this out. Or then when Mathers translates it into English, he's like, oh crap, you know, Queen Victoria, we're all Victorians and sex is like the most terrifying thing we've ever thought about. We got to strip out all the sexy parts and just leave it all boring and filled with like God sweat and weird space skulls and dreadlocks and
yeah, you know, that's a good
divine point. Star lasers, yeah.
Even in the Golden Dawn, and then also in the BOTA during their rituals, they at one point there's a point in their regular group ritual where they you're standing at the altar and you're looking at each other and you're doing a thing, and it's usually could be a male and a male or a male and a female, but they considered it to be a little bit too sexual. So instead of staring at each other in the eyes, they remove that from the ritual, and you have to look down or look away, keep your eyes closed, because they didn't want that sexual energy going for whatever reason. Doesn't make any sense. But there have been others, like Fraternity of the Hidden Light, who, you know, some of that stuff. They're a newer group, so some of that stuff they did away with it, and they require eye contact with each other during certain teaching sessions. So, just a difference of the time, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But also, like in a group setting like that, like in a magical lodge, you know, inviting or igniting those sorts of feelings can actually have very real effects on the politics of the lodge.
For sure.
Like you end up having, you know, lodge members getting involved with each other, and that can cause a lot of friction and stuff. So in that sense, like maybe it's good to limit it or mitigate it or something in that setting. I honestly don't know. I've never been in that sort of situation.
Yeah. And that's why I think with Freemasonry, it's unfortunate that we don't allow women, but at the same time, I see the need for it. It's a very mm-hmm. level playing field. You know, there's no, mm-hmm. Nobody has to put on a show necessarily. And to try to impress someone of the opposite sex or whatever. It's just men.
Just men. Just a bunch of
just
dicks.
Just a bunch of dicks. old dicks.
But going back to the sexual symbolism in mysticism, even in, you know, the first book of the Corpus Hermeticum, which has the Poimandrus, which has the creation story, part of the creation story involves the universal man or the God form of man before incarnating as little humans running around in the world. One of the reasons that man descends into creation is because man sees nature and is like, holy shit, I gotta get me some of that, and falls in love and goes down to basically be nature's lover.
Must have been springtime and all of nature was fucking. The plants are shooting pollen everywhere. The
and man was like, geez, I feel really left out.
It's like, fuck.
He's like, Dad, I want to go to the rave.
I'm going to get some of that.
Yeah, which is, you know, what we're all here doing now. Like, we are actually that spirit of man or the man god incarnated as, you know, billions and billions of fleshy little critters interfacing with nature.
Yeah. Trapped in matter.
Trapped in matter. Well, I mean, in Hermeticism, you don't look at it as being trapped, right? In Hermeticism, it's our choice.
For sure. And that's, I really, really came to realize that when, a month or so ago after experiencing the spirit molecule and coming back into reality, it was just like, I had this overwhelming feeling that this is just, this life is amazing. I love being alive. It's wonderful. Yeah. I'm gonna suck every bit of juice out.
Yeah, like the feeling of having experiences, even bad ones. Well, I mean, even the bad ones that I've had so far, in any case, you know, it's always sort of like, man, it's good to be alive. Like, it's good to feel. It's good to know. It's good to see all of the stuff.
Oh, sure. Even especially the bad stuff, because when people succeed, they party. When they fail, they ponder. That's the old saying. So when you have these failures, as long as you don't look at it, as long as you frame it correctly in your mind, it can be a very, they're the most valuable learning lessons you can have in life. And they really make you appreciate everything that you do have and the things that you've accomplished. And you can't have the sweet without the bitter, or the sweet is never as sweet as without the bitter.
Joey, do me a favor. Have a big drink.
I'm going to keep rambling on all these little quotes. Cheers.
Cheers.
So I found this this article I was talking about. Uh-huh. How to do sex magic according to the shamanic sex coaches.
Holy crap.
Shamanic sex.
That sounds really exciting.
Yeah, you know, they, I mean, this is what they do for a living. They go around and teach people how to do sex magic.
Can you send me the link in our Google Hangouts chat?
Oh, that's a great idea. I will,
that way I can put it in the show notes, right? I could even look at it while you're looking at it.
I just shot it through the universe.
Oh, oh man. The universe loves this.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a brief little article, you know, about I mean, these people who teach people how to do sex magic, and it's not. I would call it like New Age yoga, sex shamanism.
Uh huh. That sounds pretty fascinating.
That's kind of how I describe it, but it's pretty basic stuff.
So I feel like. I mean, I don't know very much about this. I'm just going to mention it so that perhaps we can maybe you. Do you know anything about like tantric yoga or like Kundalini yoga?
You know, not a whole lot. I know that Sting does Kundalini yoga, and he like, you know, will have sex for 15 hours and come 20 or 30 times during that time. That's my extent of knowledge with Kundalini yoga.
That sounds dehydrated.
I know, it sounds miserable.
It does. It sounds like there'd be a lot of chafing, perhaps.
But Sting also hasn't aged in 20 or 30 years, so maybe he's got something.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I always figured it was the melange. Like maybe when he was, you know, filming Dune, he
figured something out.
Got some Dune powers.
Let me get back to, so this article, this is like the uh-huh. best thing out of this article. The very end, he says, there's a question to the one of the shaman sex coaches. What would you say to people who may question the legitimacy of sex magic? For people who say that it isn't real, I would say, look at the placebo effect, which is well documented in medication studies. If you get the outcome you wanted, either it really works, or you now just believe it works. It's the same. And if it doesn't accomplish your goal right away, be patient. At the very least, you hopefully had a good orgasm.
I suppose.
I think that should be the disclaimer for every class that they have.
I mean, if you really think about it in terms of, you know, different magical practices, that's kind of like the best, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if it works or not.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best part. But I think it's interesting to note, like, yeah, I've read articles of Steven Tyler, who's, you know, he got into Crowley for a while, and he talked, I believe it might have been in the Rolling Stone, about how he, you know, he's used sex magic and experimented with it for years. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not, as far as I know, he's not a member of any actual occult group like the OTO, but he just talks about his general interest in it. And then who else? Jimmy Page, who,
oh yeah,
he's a big Crowley fan. And I guess, I don't know, I guess you could say Crowley is kind of the father of sex magic, at least in our time.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty fair to say. I think that, I mean, my suspicion, again, you know, I'm no expert in the subject, but my suspicion is that most people who get introduced to it are introduced through Crowley.
I would imagine so.
For sure.
And that, which is actually, that's how he became the head of the OTO, because he discovered the secret of sex magic and published it in his Book of Lies.
Oh, right. And then the OTO guys actually came to him and was like, how did you get our secrets? That's our ninth degree secret.
Exactly.
Curly's like, well, you know,
like, oh, well, I got to take the order now. It's you. It's yours.
Yeah. It's all you. You gotta take care of it.
Now ravage my bottom. Curly was awesome. He liked to have people ravage his bottom.
Yeah, well, you know, he's not alone in that. There are a lot of people who enjoy a bit of bottom ravaging now and again.
Maybe Crowley was the father of modern day bottom ravaging.
I really suspect that that's not the case. I think that there were a lot of bottom ravagers around in the time.
You're true. Yeah, that's
and,
true.
Yeah. Crowley just attributed a new, you know, meaning to it. It was magical.
It was magical. Bottom magical bottom ravaging.
Bottom ravaging. The new magic. So some other stuff about sort of like sexuality and mysticism. I had, you know, I showed you the Kabbalah and Eros book
here. Right.
I'll show it to you again. Isn't that a nice shade of blue?
It's beautiful. It makes me feel really relaxed.
It's called post-coital blue. there's a lot of so Judaism, and especially mystical Judaism, is way more comfortable with sex than Christianity is. So which I find really curious, because, you know, Christianity is prudish, to say the least. And you know, like, Puritan views on sex have, you know, poisoned our entire culture on sexual ideas and stuff. I am really bad at talking about this, which is why I'm having a difficult time starting this particular
subject. Do you have some issues? Do you have some issues with sex, Eric?
I was raised in America and by a Midwestern family, and so yes, totally. I have issues about sex. Doesn't everybody have issues?
I think
about
everybody
sex?
Does. Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Every word that was ever fought was probably because of some sexual imbalance. Everything that was created came from, you know, it's just that rules are life.
Oh yeah, it's totally a mess, isn't it?
It's a mess.
It's because we're. It's because men are a bunch of dicks.
It's true.
what I was going to say is in Kabbalah, apparently there are, and I suspect a lot of it is talked about in this book, that yes.
And I'll have another, sir.
Man, now I want to get to the bottom of my beer. Hold on. Let me finish this beer. Maybe it'll, you talk about something for a second, Joey. I'm
you're bottoming. Well, you know, I was talking about all of nature fucking earlier and how that relates to sex magic somehow. I remember years and years ago in Oklahoma, back when I was in Oklahoma doing my landscaping gig, I really got in tune with nature, you know, almost like a weird Native American thing. But I could tell the second that springtime was hitting, that green man of spring, you know, that sexual energy that just, well, if you ever do mushroom tea, you will feel the hum of nature. And it's that hum that comes out in spring. And I would feel it in some incomprehensible way. I knew it was coming. And then maybe 3 to 5 days later, I would see tree buds popping or plants just starting to show sap flowing. And then, you know, the pollen would start shooting out. All of nature would just start fucking everywhere. And the flowers would start blooming. You know, you get weird birds doing strange sex dances in parking lots at other birds. And it was fascinating to watch. And that was, I don't know, it's just a big eye opener. It's springtime now. This podcast is probably going to be up. So, you know, pay attention to nature because you're going to see a lot of weird shit out there.
Oh man. And if you're in Oregon or in another place that has, conifers or evergreen trees, they are extremely public about their sexual activity.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there are places in Oregon where you'll get clouds of pollen, like just big yellow clouds of pollen coming off of these trees, just giant tree orgies all across the Pacific Northwest. Oh, and it's even more perverted because a lot of evergreen trees, a lot of conifers are male on the top half of them and female.
Holy crap, he just blew my mind. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. Pay attention. I mean, that's why you get to see all the pine cones. You know, they're all getting pollinated on the bottom half of the tree.
So the top half is pollinating the bottom half. It's like just...
Yeah, they wait for the wind, right? So they're trying to pollinate their neighbor, but I bet you they pollinate themselves plenty.
There's a lot, you know, there's just one lonely tree out there in the middle of a field that somebody put there, and he's just like, oh, well, I guess I'll just do this myself. They.
I don't even know if we have a word for that. It's they. I don't even know if we have a word for self-incest in the English language.
I think they just call it, who knows? I don't know. Good question. I'm sure there's a scientific term.
Let's call it Douglasing after the Douglas fir.
Sold.
All right, cool. We invented a new word here on My Alchemical Bromance.
Stop taking those long showers, boy. I know you're in there Douglasing yourself. It ain't right. So,
all right.
Have you ever used sex magic?
I don't really. No, not really. Not in any sort of serious or. No, I don't think I really have. It's not been part of my docket.
But it's something you can use with someone else or by yourself. And you know, we covered that at that in the podcast, but Bear Lick Brewing with Kenneth Grant's kind of talk at the Disinfo conference with charging a talisman or a sigil, as he calls it.
You're talking about, that's not Kenneth Grant. That's the guy who wrote The Invisibles.
Grant Morrison. Yes, Kenneth. Grant. I'm getting all my sex magic people mixed up.
All the sex talk has Joey a little addled. I just got a text message. I'm going to see if it's Matt Anthony.
All right. Where are you, Matt Anthony? Where in the world is Matt Anthony? Or as I like to call him, Manthony.
Manthony. Nope, it wasn't him. He's still ignoring
us. Sad day. Oh, by the way. I know you and Matt. Debt of gratitude because I've been deep in Twin Peaks. Just finished the first season.
Oh, are you ready? So the new season is coming out like at
the end of
May.
Oh God, really? Jesus, that's gonna be. I don't think I can be ready by then. I've got like 16 seasons to go through.
There's only two seasons, luckily.
What do you mean?
You're just gonna. Of the first Twin Peaks, there's only two seasons.
Oh, I thought it was like several years. I didn't know it was two seasons.
Well, two seasons is 2 years.
Wow. Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
I'll be ready.
Yeah, so you can do it. You could totally do it. Yeah. And I think that one of the things we're going to have to do is figure out how to watch it because I don't have cable. Do you have cable?
Is it going to be on cable or is it just going to be on Netflix?
I think it's going to be on Showtime or something of that nature. It's on some
I have
like premium.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't have Showtime, but I can get it real quick. If it's going to be on one of those premium channels, for sure. I've got HBO. Let's consult the Oracle.
Well, we need to. The Oracle. All right. So while you're doing that, I'm going to get back to the Kabbalah and sex magic stuff that I was going to mention before. You keep consulting the Oracle. So there's two things. First of all, one of my Kabbalah teachers told me that there are certain schools of like classical Kabbalah, like 15th century, 16th century stuff.
You're breaking up on me a little bit there.
I'm not breaking up with you, Joey. We're together forever.
Together forever.
Every alchemist ends up with a surfeit of Solomonic gold. But have you made sure that your precious alchemical creations can follow you to the next life? The transmigrational investment experts at the Gnomes of Zurich can provide the expertise to make sure that your hard-earned fortunes are available to you no matter the afterlife of your long repose. To start investing wisely, enclose 1 troy ounce of Solomonic gold with 6 ounces of fresh manure in a mason jar and seal it under the sign of Mercury. Bury the jar in your backyard during a full moon, and our subterranean account specialists will contact you during the next lunar return. Get started investing in tomorrow, today. The Gnomes of Zurich, putting the riches of the cosmos to work for you.
So, we've actually been recording for almost 45 minutes now, so we can...
Nice.
Yeah. So I just wanted to tell you one more thing. Then, maybe two.
Two. Make it three.
Okay, three more things. First thing... first thing, my Kabbalah teacher, I've started this story like 3 times. I suspect a lot of it's going to get edited out because it's all in the mess where we were losing.
Oh, gosh. Connection. Yeah, I didn't hear any of it.
Well, so supposedly there are a bunch of Kabbalah meditations that were taught in the 15th and 16th centuries where you were basically told you're not doing the meditation right if you're not sexually aroused while you're in the middle of it.
Oh, wow. That's hardcore.
It is. And it sort of ties back to the idea that, that creation itself, like the idea of just creation is sexual, you know, and in Judaism or in a monotheistic religion, that's weird because it's like God making God pregnant and God basically, What were we going to call that? Douglasing? Yeah. God basically Douglases himself and gives birth to creation. Right. So I just told a really cool story for the 3rd time. I'm not going to tell it again. You're just going to have to wait until we edit this episode of the podcast. And what was the other thing?
It's probably showing up great on your side, though.
Oh, yeah.
Since you're recording.
Yeah, I mean, every time you're talking about being cut out, it actually sounds just fine on my end. So that's cool. Okay.
Good.
The third thing.
Just cut me out. Okay. cut my whale.
The second and or third thing I wanted to mention is in the new translation of Abramelin, the Book of Abramelin. You know this one?
Nice.
Right? You know about it?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So this is where that quote, inflame thyself with prayer, comes from. You know that quote?
No. That Aleister Crowley made that quote.
No. That. Aleister Crowley said that, quoting it from the Mather's Aleister translation. Yeah, from Abramelin. Or Abramelin. I don't know how people actually usually say this. I'm going to say Abramelin. And then I'll always piss off and say, I mean, Abramelin. Joey, are your kids watching a lot of porn right now?
Probably.
Yeah.
It's awful quiet upstairs.
But they're home?
No, there's only one here.
Ah,
And I'm on a dedicated Wi-Fi connection.
Ah.
I actually cut them off of it this week.
So I believe anyhow, so in Abramelin, that inflame thyself with prayer quote, I believe comes from chapter 13 in the new version. I don't know if that's absolutely true. I'll look it up again, but when you read it, you kind of get the impression again, like, oh, inflame thyself with prayer, that's actually like a sexual reference. It's a reference to sexual arousal almost. So the idea of so sex magic is definitely firmly rooted in mysticism as well.
Oh yeah, for sure.
What I'm trying to get to.
I got deeply entrenched in mysticism in my teen years in the backwoods of Logan County, and I was inflaming myself in prayer constantly. It was delightful.
Well, I mean, I have to say, earlier when I, like, I don't know that I've necessarily, like, practiced sex magic on purpose, but mysticism that involved, like, that sort of imagery is always present. Like, I definitely know that when I was, the first formal training I had was for that kind of neo-shamanism stuff that is a little hokey, but
right,
super effective. And that stuff led to a lot of, you know, being inflamed with prayer for sure. Like, it's...
Yeah, yeah.
And part of it is just, you know, when you're first introduced to magical imagery or the ability to create magical images in your head and you're a teenage kid, what else are you going to use it for?
Oh, for sure.
Right.
And when you really start training your imagination, like, it's fantastic. I would recommend all teenagers train their imagination.
Train your imagination.
Nowadays it's we're in a bad state of affairs, America.
Got kids
looking at porn on their phones and on their iPads and all that. They're not imagining any of it.
Yeah, take a night off every once in a while. Don't even use your phone at all.
No, just imagine it in your brain. It'll be so much better.
Yes, America, we're teaching you sex magic as we speak. gross.
I feel like we're going to lose our one follower over this episode.
We have 10. We have 10 right now.
Do we really? Nice.
Yeah, and I suspect a lot of them will get really excited about us talking about sex magic.
I think so. Who isn't excited about that?
But I also feel like we got out of this sex magic episode pretty easily by me not knowing anything. Right? So it was just you.
Yeah, and I didn't really. I just kind of spun a lot of bullshit. I don't really know anything either.
Cool. Maybe we should have that sort of disclaimer at the beginning of the episode. Yeah,
I made it all up.
We're kind of idiots, but we're really good at talking on the computer and totally we're drinking beer.
We like to drink beer, talk on the computer about things that we pretend we know about.
So
now, I don't know. Any of these subjects you look at, it takes years and years of study. And at the end of it, even after years and years of study, you feel like you don't know anything. Well, always have beginner's mind.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, that's a really important way to look at it is to, you know, it's always better in any subject, even if you're practicing this stuff, like it's so much better to assume that you're an idiot. You know, to assume that you don't know what the hell is going on, because it's the only way to really learn stuff. If you feel like you already know everything, then you're not going to pick up any new stuff.
That's true.
Beginner's
mind, as Dogen called it.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, right now we are still kind of in the beginning stages of the podcast. And Matt and I talked about this early on, and I think you were there too, where I was of the opinion that we should talk about sort of the various broad categories in modern occultism so that our audience could know what we were good at, right? Like, if we're idiots at stuff, they should probably know that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'm totally cool with admitting that I'm an idiot.
Yeah, me too.
I'll take off the mantle. It's fine.
Joey, we are both idiots in all sorts of ways that are totally different, which is cool. Like, for instance, at least I'm not drinking my goddamn beer out of a can.
I know, that's ridiculous, isn't it? I'm totally unprepared for this podcast. I showed up, I like didn't even have my microphone hooked up, drinking beer out of a can, like a savage.
I mean, your microphone is hooked up. You were technically, your technology was ready, except for the beer drinking technology, which makes me think, you know what we should do? We should have My Alchemical Bromance pint glasses.
Oh, damn, you cut out there. My Alchemical Bromance what?
Pint glasses.
Yeah, absolutely. with that symbol on them.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
All right. Yeah, me too.
Let's do this.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Thank you for listening to My Alchemical Bromance. You can find us on the web at myalchemicalbromance.com. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or Podcast Addict or anything of that nature. Tune in next time, and that's it. Bye. Good night.